The Hour of 10:15 Hammer, I would call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. And I realize that members have bills in various places, so I know that a lot of folks will be in and out. So the first, if you look at the order, we have Representative Smith, Representative Backer. Are either of those representatives here? Okay, I think we're going to go to Chair Anderson's bill. Is that okay? We'll go to Chair Anderson's bill. Life, oh, that's right. Life belongs to those that show up. So we have Chair Anderson. When we have a quorum, how far are we from the quorum? Okay. So when we have a quorum, Chair Anderson will move House File 3162. So members, if you would take out 3162, and I see that there's an A1 amendment. Is that the author's amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we will take care of that when we actually have a quorum. So, welcome to the committee. If you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the author's amendment, we make an adjustment allow for recognition of the credits that corporations already have in place. So that's what the amendment does. But as far as the overall bill does, as you know, the federal tax conformity or tax bill eliminated the corporate AMT tax, and if Minnesota were to keep the corporate AMT tax, it obviously would make it more challenging and difficult for our businesses to file their taxes, which is opposite of what the intent was with the federal tax bill. And so we're trying to just make that happen here in the, on the Minnesota side of things, and that's it in a nutshell. And I do have some testifiers, Mr. Chair, if you are ready for that.
Thank you very much, Chair Anderson. We will go to the first testifier, Beth Cadoon, and we'll go in this order, Beth Cadoon, Jill Larson, and Lars Negsted. Lars, is Lars here? Is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill, other than who I mentioned, or with concerns? The department on this bill? Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank the chair as well as Chair Anderson for hearing this bill today. We do think it's important when we're looking at your tax bill for this year, dealing especially with the federal tax conformity issue, to get all the issues impacted by federal tax conformity on the table. This is one when you looked at the revenue estimate from the Department of Revenue the other day. Corporate AMT repeal was not included in that estimate. So we certainly wanted to get this bill on the table so you could see what another item is that is impacted by the federal tax bill. As was mentioned by Chair Anderson, this bill, the federal tax bill did repeal corporate AMT at the federal level, and we think it's important to repeal it at the state level as well. So we're in strong support of this bill. We would mention, you know, the corporate AMT does greatly increase the complexity of the tax system. And we think this will be even more apparent if we continue Minnesota's when the federal no longer has theirs. The corporate AMT at the state level is based on a lot of the federal definitions. It uses the federal form to calculate Minnesota's tax. If we no longer have that, it obviously is going to make it much more complicated not only for the Minnesota taxpayer, but also for the federal department, for the state Department of Revenue to have to audit this provision as well. There was a study that was done by, it was Joel Slemrod and Marshall Blumenthal a few years ago, found that compliance costs for those that had to file the corporate AMT were between 18 and 26% higher. So we're talking, it does make it very complicated to continue this credit. Only 8 other states currently have a corporate AMT calculation. I'm assuming those other states are going to look at if they continue their AMT credit as well. So all of these point to really the violation of a rules for good tax policy. If you have a corporate AMT, that the tax be easy to administer, efficient, and transparent. The corporate AMT has none of these, so we would urge its repeal. We also know the bill also includes the repeal of the minimum tax. I think that was more put in to show that, you know, the corporations also pay the regular corporate tax. They pay a minimum tax, plus they pay this corporate AMT. The minimum tax, we're really focused our arguments on the corporate AMT repeal. If you'd ever look at that minimum fee, we would also urge, if you ever look to repeal that, we certainly want it repealed for all businesses, not just C-Corps, as this bill is currently written. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. We do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We are going to take a bit of a diversion from our normal committee process, and I believe Representative Schultz is excused here for a few days here. So Chair Marquardt moves the minutes of Thursday, March 1st. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And, you know, I didn't consult Representative Schultz about this, but sometimes it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. So with that, we will go to House File 3162. Chair Anderson moves House File 3162. Chair Anderson moves the H3162A1 amendment. Any discussion? This is an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended before us. To your next witness, Chair Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, if I can just interrupt briefly, too, just so everybody knows, this idea came from Senator Ann Rest, who has worked on tax policy for quite some time, and I neglected to mention that in my introduction. So just wanted to get that out there as well.
Thank you very much. Please state your name. You represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Jill Larson. I'm from the Minnesota Business Partnership. I'll try to be brief because I don't want to repeat.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Chair Anderson and Chair Garofalo for co-authoring this bill. And, Mr. Chairman, thank you for having the hearing. As was mentioned, the federal tax reform law repealed the corporate AMT. And from our discussions with our member companies and with tax practitioners, they think that it would make sense for Minnesota to also repeal its corporate AMT in terms of simplifying tax filing. And it was mentioned that only a handful of other states have an AMT now, and so folks think it would be helpful as you look to putting together your larger federal tax conformity bill to include this provision. Again, my remarks today are just on the corporate AMT repeal. We don't have a position on the minimum fee issue. So as Representative Anderson mentioned, this is a bipartisan bill. Senator Rest, the DFL lead in the Senate Tax Committee, is the chief author of the bill in the Senate, and we hope that you will strongly consider including this in your federal tax conformity bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Chair Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson or Ms. Larson, do you have any data on the minimum fee in terms of that? You know, how much it costs different taxpayers at different levels. I mean, I guess, you know, I know when this happened a few years ago, I mean, on one hand, it doesn't seem like that much money to have, you know, $200 for a corporation that's got $1 million in revenue, you know, and it's, I mean, it scales up some from there. If I remember right, it's $500 or so for a corporation with a couple $1 million of revenue or assets. But, I mean, these are... you know, these are taxes that the corporation pays even if they have no income at all. I mean, this is not really an income tax. I mean, it's just a minimum fee. And, you know, it sort of gets away from the whole concept of an income tax. And I guess I'm curious, do we know, you know, small businesses, I mean, a business that has $1 million in total revenue and assets is a pretty small business that we are now clipping for an additional some hundreds of dollars. Do we have any data on what levels are paying most of this tax?
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, I don't have a lot of data at the tip of my tongue. Mr. Michael actually might, but I know in the revenue note there is some a reference on the first page of the revenue note that talks about that in tax year 2018, taxpayers, some of Minnesota factors less than $990,000 pay no minimum fee. As you mentioned, the fee ranges from $200 to almost $10,000, and the highest fee applies to those with factors greater than about $40 million. So it looks like the largest fee amount applies to larger companies. But Mr. Michael may have more
Mr.
specific
Michael.
Information, or the Department of Revenue possibly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, I do not have with me, we'd have to request it from revenue, how much fee is paid in each of those various categories by business size. My guess is that, you know, most of the revenue comes from the mid and upper levels, but that's just a guess. But we can request that from revenue and distribute it to the committee.
And I guess, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Michael, on that same note, as I'm looking at the revenue note, it talks about eliminating the minimum fee for C corporations, but I believe that this minimum fee is paid by S corporations and by LLCs, too. I guess, can you confirm that? And then are those apparently not included in this particular bill?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, yes, that minimum fee applies to all types of entities, including the pass-through entities. And whoever put this bill together just repealed it for C corporations and not for those pass-through entities. When we request the data from revenue, we'll ask for the breakdown between the two types of entities.
Okay. I'd appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Mr. Michael, thank you.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Larson or Representative Anderson, which other states have this, and can you characterize the presence of this in the states around us? And then it would seem to me that there's going to be other states trying to get rid of this. Have we heard anything from those states and those efforts so far in their tax reform efforts?
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, Chair Drazkowski, part of the information that I have, some of the other states, Alaska, California, Maine, Kentucky, Florida, Iowa, and possibly New Hampshire used to, and Kentucky used to, I don't think they have anymore. So, and from what I can tell so far, we're trying to keep track of what other states are doing with respect to conforming to the federal tax bill, and I haven't yet seen what other states are doing on the corporate AMT specifically, but we'll check on that and get back to you on that.
Chair Anderson.
And, Mr. Chair, getting back to Chair Knobloch's comment, too, I'm open to any amendments that you think would help make the bill more palatable to help all these small businesses in particular. So,
and, Mr. Chair, since my name was mentioned, Mr. Michael, can you ask you if a company has income, do they still pay the minimum fee on top of their, say, corporate income tax, or is that just part of their income tax then?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, this is an add-on fee, so you pay it in addition to the regular tax. The other provision of Representative Anderson's bill, which is the alternative minimum tax, as its name suggests, that you pay the higher of the two, but this is an add-on fee.
Thank you. Knobloch? Okay, Chair Drazkowski, you still have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson and Ms. Larson. It sounds like we're nearly an island and probably will become once again an island. And very good bill. Thank you.
Wasn't there a book that takes an island? Full village. Oh, okay. Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Maybe a question for Ms. Larson or Ms. Cadoon.
Ms. Cadoon, why don't you join us? Because I didn't allow members to ask questions of you.
We'll
get all three up here. Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much. As we kind of go through this conformity bill, there's going to be X amount of dollars to spend. And I'm looking at, when it comes to the corporations, where your priorities would be. You know, the corporate franchise tax rate's 9.8%, and then there's going to be other proposals. So if you could rank them, and especially regarding the franchise tax rate, you know, if we had dollars to buy that down, would you put it there first? Or I'd like to know, because we're going to be dealing with this, and just what would be the priorities of spending, you know, a limited amount of dollars? Where would you like to see those go first when it comes to corporations?
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Marquardt, I think where we're at right now is we would like to see the corporate tax rate addressed as well as you're putting the bill together, and with the revenue that is coming in the corporate tax area, we would like to see some of that revenue used to reduce the corporate rate. And in addition to that, the repealing the AMT is also on our list. And, you know, as we see these numbers coming in and the bills being put together, we're going to have to go back and ask our members to prioritize those because we understand that that's the way this place works. So I think at this point, reducing the rate is important. We are concerned about the legislature trying to tax some of the foreign income provisions, and we will be talking about that as the committee moves forward. But there are other provisions that we agree that the committee should conform to, and that revenue that's raised from conforming to those provisions, we believe should be plowed back into reducing business taxes, and reducing the corporate rate is one of our priorities. We do have the third highest rate in the country, and although we are a single sales factor state, which is helpful to Minnesota headquartered businesses, the fact is that many other states are also becoming single sales factor states, so that leverage is reduced a bit, and somebody's paying that 9.8% rate, because when we score it, we see that there's a revenue loss to it. And so I think other states we know are already looking to reduce their corporate rates when they respond to federal conformity, and so I think state corporate income tax rates will become even more relevant given the fact that the federal rate was reduced. Comparatively speaking, state corporate rates will become more relevant from a competitive perspective than they are even now. So that's why the rate is a priority for us.
Ms. Cadone, the chamber's priorities?
Mr. Chair.
On this issue.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Marquardt and Chair Davids. We'd have the same opinion as was mentioned by Jill Larson. We do have a lot of the same membership as well, and that's what we've been hearing from our membership. There really needs to be our priority on looking to see how we can make our tax system more competitive, and that really does get at the rates. As was mentioned, we do have the third highest rate in the nation at 9.8%. We know that other states, such as Iowa, who actually has a higher tax rate, though there's some offsetting features to that, they're looking to reduce their tax rate as well. I would mention as well, just to put this in context, that the C-corporations are much more than just the biggest companies, and I think that's what's maybe kind of a falsehood that's out there. There's about 35,000 C-corporation filers on the last data that I have, and many of those are smaller businesses. I think, if I remember, I don't have the stat here, but I think about 77% of those have gross receipts of $1 million or less. So that's that 9.8% rate that was mentioned. Those are not companies that are necessarily selling outside the state. That can take advantage of the current single sales factor, which we do think is an important component of our tax system. But they are paying that high marginal tax rate. That is our billboard rate as well. And I think when you look to encourage investment, entrepreneurship, and growth in the state, it's that high billboard rate that we need to get at. We also do want to clean up other provisions, such as the corporate AMT, and so that's why that's important to also get into the mix. Thank you.
Chair Mark.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that's very helpful, because we're going to have limited options here, and I want to make sure to hear from you to what you think as far as competitiveness and that would lead to economic growth, kind of what those factors would be. So where we're spending these dollars are going in to the areas that can do the most good. So I do appreciate those comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Mark Quirk. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to echo some of the comments of Chair Knobloch. This AMT really oftentimes is not an income tax. And 80% of our businesses are small businesses, pass-through entities, LLCs, and sub-S. And I've been no stranger to AMT, but in those circumstances when your company had a loss or made very little income, oftentimes the AMT just adds insult to injury in that you made no money, but you still have to write out a check. And it's not an income tax in that circumstance because you didn't have any income. And so if AMT doesn't go away entirely, I would hope that we could at least offer something that would fix that conundrum to require that at least you have to have enough income to pay the AMT rather than to write a check out of your treasury. Often businesses operate at a loss for the first few years to get started and build a book of business and become competitive in their marketplace, and this just makes it more difficult to create jobs when you're taxing people out of business. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Will Rogers said, the difference between death and taxes is that death doesn't get worse every time Congress meets. So just something, some food for thought. Question, if someone in the room knows, maybe Ms. Cadoon or Mr. Michael, if we lowered our highest rate from 9.8 to 6.8, what revenue would the state, what less revenue would come in comparison to the conformity, which is going to be 18, 19, $500 million more to the state, and then 2021 will be well over $1 billion. So I'm wondering the offset, what revenue would be lost if we could lower that rate and keep that money in the hands of our businesses in the state.
Ms. Templin, you got that off the top of your head?
Third less.
I think that they're going to need some time on this one. Or do you...
I can give just a rough estimate. There was a kind of a cheat sheet that was done by the Department of Revenue that showed if you did a 0.5% reduction in the corporate rate, so I'll do a 1% rate. For the biennium, that would be about a $200 million reduction in general fund revenues. Obviously, that's static analysis, so you don't know what's going to happen with economic growth. We did see with the federal tax bill, for example, that we did have increased economic activity as part of some of these rate reductions. So obviously the number I just gave you would be a static analysis versus dynamic scoring.
I have a note here that it's per half percent rate decrease. It's $53 million. So to your question, it would be about $318 million. Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so we really have an opportunity to lower that rate and become competitive with the rest of the nation and really make Minnesota a leader for corporations and businesses to stay. The fruit is ripening for picking, and I certainly hope, I know that this committee will see that bill, I'm sure, and we just hope we can get it passed in the state. It's a great opportunity, none like we'll have in years to come.
Ms. Cadoon?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out your rate reduction was much more robust, which I appreciate. If you just did a 1% rate reduction in the corporate rate just to show where we might stand competitively, that would bring our rate down to 8.8%. We would then move from third highest in the nation to eighth highest in the nation. We would then be below California, whose rate's at 8.84%, as well as below New Jersey, some other high-tax states. So we think that would be a good, strong move to make.
Vice Chair McDonald?
Well, like my coffee, I like things robust. So we'll go to – I'd like a bigger cut. Thank you, Ms. Cadoon.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of along those same lines of – questions, what are the projected jobs that this will enable employers to create?
Ms. Cadoon?
Mr. Chair, so currently the bill that's in front of you is the repeal of the corporate AMT. I have not seen analysis regarding the number of jobs. Regarding repealing the corporate AMT, it's really about more the complexity of the system, the real problems of still having a corporate AMT when it's no longer, we have it at the federal level. We do know it obviously would be a reduction in taxes, but I think the biggest impact would be the reduction in the complexity and the administrative cost of keeping a corporate AMT, an alternative minimum tax calculation, when the federal government doesn't have it and the great majority of other states do not have it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would the intent be for the employers that you're representing to use those savings to grow their businesses and hire people to grow the economy?
Well, Mr. Chair, if
Chair
I can chime in, I think on this issue in particular, we saw what happened with the federal tax reform bill, where you have businesses across the country that are handing out bonuses to their employees, investing into their businesses here in the states versus in foreign countries. It has just been an economic boom for us as a country. And we want to have kind of the mini version of it, if you will, for Minnesota to have something like that happen here. But that's going to take not just this bill, but a collection of tax reform for the state that I know Chair Davids has been working on. And so welcome your input on how you think that we could achieve that, because we want to have the same results here in Minnesota to make sure that we are competitive on a long-term basis. So any suggestions you have, welcome to hear them.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I appreciate that. I'll think about it. And, you know, one thing I think we just need to be cautious of is looking out with the conformity changes, you know, and making sure that we're taking care of the people who send us here, which are the voters, and how it is affecting their pocketbooks. And so my preference is going to be to make sure that we pass along savings to them first, and if there is revenue left over, figure out what we need to do best with that. So I'll think about that, though. Thank you, Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Representative Metza. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Representative Metza's question, if you take the fiscal savings to the private sector in this bill divided by a $50,000 salary, that's 2,000 jobs.
Representative Metza, your name is used.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know when not to respond.
Chair Drazkowski? Okay. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, just thank you, Mr. Chair. Just note under, she said under a static analysis it would cost us revenue. And, of course, we know that static is precisely wrong versus a dynamic, which is approximately right. So if we cut the corporate tax to 4%, you'd see robust economic growth and more tax revenues.
Okay. Questions for the partnership representative or the chamber representative? Okay. We will now go to the gentleman from Isaiah. Isaiah. Lars Negsted. Well, I didn't have you on the list. Mr. Hickey, did you want to say something?
He didn't squeeze me in on the list.
We'll go to Lars first, and then we'll come back to Mr. Hickey. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Lars Negsted. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm the policy director for Isaiah. We're a statewide organization of clergy, congregations, and people of faith working for racial and economic justice.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I will be brief. I'm not an expert in tax policy. However, I'm concerned about the repeal of corporate taxes, especially in the wake of the giant tax cuts already passed in Washington. Those cuts and other federal policy decisions are creating a lot of uncertainty for Minnesota's budget going into the future. For example, MinnesotaCare faces an $806 million shortfall over fiscal years 2018 through 2021 due to cuts resulting from the 1332 waiver that authorized the state's reinsurance program and the discontinuation of the cost-sharing reductions. Beyond the budget uncertainty, we're hearing stories across the state of enormous needs that are not being met. There are families near Wilmer who are being crushed by medical debt to the point of facing the loss of farmland that has been in the family for generations. A whole generation of students is staggering under crushing student debt, and yet tuition keeps increasing. Another urgent need for increased funding is child care assistance. Over 5,000 children are on a waiting list, which stretches on for more than a year, preventing thousands of more families from getting the help they need. Reimbursement rates to providers are too low and they're out of date. My own church hosts a preschool program, as do hundreds of others across the state, but it's not nearly enough to meet the need. Statewide investments are needed to support families as well as providers. As the Conference of Catholic Bishops has reaffirmed recently, a government budget is a moral document. It reveals our values. We're concerned what message the repeal of corporate taxes sends about our values, especially in a time of both great abundance and great need. We hope you will keep in mind what Jesus referred to as the least of these in Matthew chapter 25. As you make your decisions about our state's tax and budget priorities. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Mr. Negsted?
Mr.
Chair? Chair Dabney.
Thank you. Mr. Negsted, in the previous comments, Chair Anderson talked about wanting to make sure after the federal tax changes, the 40% cut in corporate taxes there, that Minnesota initiated changes to be competitive. And that sounded to me like kind of a race to the bottom on corporate taxes and corporate responsibility for the services that they use, benefit from. I'm thinking roads, I'm thinking courts, I'm thinking an education system, all of that. How does Isaiah understand that tension between taxes and needed services by the corporate sector?
Mr. Negsted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I would say that we're concerned about the impact of these corporate tax cuts. The New York Times had an article just last month about the record number of share buybacks. Mm-hmm. So rather than creating jobs, many of these tax cuts are actually going into the pockets of shareholders, and the vast majority of stocks, 84%, are held by the wealthiest 10% of Americans. So those gains are not distributed equally across the economy.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nixon. It just occurs to me that stock buybacks and things like that don't actually contribute to the economy. They don't create jobs. They don't contribute to the economy. They respond to the wishes of the top 10%, but they don't
expand the economy in any way for the remaining 90%. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gaffney. Questions for Chair Anderson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what the representative is missing is the fact that corporate taxes are regressive. And when you have a regressive tax system, that hits the people that can least afford it. So those people that are working the lower paying jobs are then required to work longer and harder to earn money. So by eliminating this, it is going to make our tax system more progressive rather than regressive. And I think it's a step forward to help those people that the gentleman here mentioned. But I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nexter, have you testified in the Senate regarding this on the rest bill?
I don't believe it's been heard yet, but I would plan to if when it comes forward.
Let me know that happens. I'd like to see that.
Okay.
That would be kind of fun. Okay. With that, other questions for Mr. Nexter? Okay, thank you very much, sir, for your testimony. We have a person that wasn't on the list, Mr. Mike Hickey, if you could present your testimony, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business coming off the bench here and jumping into the fray. Thanks for a minute. I appreciate all the sympathetic comments for small business and Representative Anderson's willingness to also support eliminating the minimum fee for the vast, vast majority of small businesses out there that are pass-through companies. Governor Plenty used to say 90%, Representative Herdos. Some people think above 90%, maybe you saw analysis at 80, but regardless, it's a huge number in the hundreds of thousands in this state. And Representative Knobloch, appreciate your comments and concerns. This is a bad tax policy from the past that we need to get rid of. It's a tax on existence. It's above and beyond the property tax, which is extremely high for a lot of small business people and people that struggle paying the commercial property tax rate. So this is something that would be nice to get rid of. We're looking at a lot of things this year, but this would be nice to include and appreciate all the concern for small business.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hickey? Okay, with that, thank you very much. Closing comments from the author?
No, thank you. Just ask for your support.
Okay. Chair Anderson moves that House File 3162 as amended be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, Chair Anderson, and to all the witnesses. Item next, we'll go to Representative Smith.
If it's okay, Chair, I have another bill to be presenting, DevOps, so if I could go in.
I had a nickel for every time I heard that one.
I'll give you a dime.
Okay.
Woo!
Representative Grunhagen moves House File 3271. Representative Grunhagen moves House File 3271. Representative Backer, is the A1 amendment the author's amendment?
It is, Chair.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen moves the H3271A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in the shape the author prefers. Before we get into the Backer bill, we have a group here from somewhere. Would you like to introduce yourselves? Oh, okay. Well, welcome to the Tax Committee. We're very, very glad you're here. Okay, we have the bill as amended before us. And is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill other than the gentleman sitting at the table? Anyone with concerns? Would the department like to weigh in on this one?
Sure.
Okay, so we will go to the department after we've had the testimony. Okay, so Representative Backer, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair and members. This bill modifies the recapture tax that applies to qualified property if the property fails to satisfy the law 3-year period after a person passed away. This came to my attention from Mr. Thomas, who is near Ortonville in 12A, so Big Stone County, this summer. And under present law, if the heirs do not use qualified small business property in the operation their business for that 3-year period, then they could be taxed up to a 16% recapture tax. What this bill does is it does two things. It limits calculation on the recapture tax to the value of the property that cease to satisfy the quality property rules. So if you had 1,000 acres and 40 acres got pulled out of that original 1,000, then that recapture tax would apply to the 40 acres, not to everything. It also exempts the recapture tax on reclassification of the farm property. So, and it also goes back to June 30th of 2011. So with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier because he knows this extremely well.
Okay, please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Thompson from Bortonville, Minnesota.
Welcome, committee.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't believe this law was meant to be do what it does. My brothers and I, when my father passed away in May, we sold, 10 months later, we sold my nephew, who was in farming operation with us, 10.4 acres, which we thought we had hired lawyers, we hired accountants. We followed all the rules. And he has a schedule. He's like 23 years old. He farms with his father. I rent my land that I inherited to my nephews. On this farm site, there is intensive, there's cattle, there's 100 head of cattle up there, some are between 50 and 100, varies off and on. There's equipment up there, there's machine sheds, there's a barn, there's cattle sheds, it all qualifies as a farm. The assessor, apparently at she reads it different than us. She qualified it as residential. And we sold it.
Where is that property?
Is it in a county?
Township? Or is it in the city?
No. It's in a township out in the country.
Okay. Please proceed. I'm sorry. I just...
Yes, sir.
When they said residential.
She classified it as residential. She told us that the day your dad died, it was classified as residential. So I think that there's... needs to be a little education brought to their attention out there. But anyway, we went on, and before the three-year period was up, our accountant said, yeah, everything's fine, looks good, and had talked to the revenue department down here before we'd done all this to make sure we did it right. 3 weeks before the anniversary of my dad's death, the revenue sent us a bill for $286,000. For the recapture tax. They went all the way back to the day my dad died. They went and put a $44,000 penalty with interest accruing still. My brothers and I, my nephew, who owns the farm, we sold him 10.4 acres, and I can see where this might have gotten a little bit sticky. He went to the Wells Fargo Bank, and for financing, they did not want on the property the grain bins, the cattle sheds and that stuff. They just wanted the garage and the house. They took that 10 acres and they split it. And I believe that's where the problem come in, but we've read that it can still be classified as 2A under as long as it's being used for farming and intense farming the way we believe it is, intense farming with 100 head of cattle up there and the my nephew has a job, he works for Titan, and he had more income on the farm than he did at Titan. Where the problem comes in is obviously the $286,000, but I don't think that any you guys intended it for this bill to do this. When the bank took and split it, we sold it as one piece. It was not split in two pieces. We gifted my nephew the other 5 acres at the same day that they did the transaction of the 10 acres. We gifted it to him. We only had one surveyor for about three counties out there, so it took a while to get everything done. But that's what happened with the whole thing. He has another thing is that he has a Schedule F. We felt we did it right, and we know we did it right, and we followed your rules, and it come back and bit us really hard.
I think you did it wrong. Okay. You did it wrong. Mr. Michael, when I wrote that in 2011, that was if there's a deceased and it goes, it has to go to a family member that they operated for at least 3 years. There, I don't think we addressed the issue if you're splitting it up or selling part of it off. I thought it was the whole thing for an entity. Is that the way we did it, or am I missing something there?
Mr. Chair, your memory is accurate, but the law was changed after that to tie it to the property tax classification to make it easier to administer.
But still, Mr. Michael, and I do recall that Farm Bureau and Farmers Union got together, and when that happens, you just do what they say, basically. And so what we did was we, but still, you couldn't be splitting it off and selling pieces of it. Could you?
To an Mr. Chair?
Just Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, you could transfer it to a qualified heir, so long as the ownership remains in the qualified heir. I think what happened here is the property tax classification changed as a result of this assessment, and that's what tripped up the owners.
But, Mr. Michael, could they have, if the assessor hadn't classified it the way they did, could you sell a piece of it and still have this qualification for this benefit?
No. Mr. Chairman, not during the three-year period, you have to meet the ownership requirements. And so if you, if you just sell part of it, that will trigger recapture tax on the entire
right.
amount that's involved. I believe, though, what happened here is it's the reclassification that without having heard or seen the details of this before now, I think that's probably what happened, but the witness might be able to tell.
Okay, please proceed, sir.
I forgot what I was going to say. I'm sorry. Well, there's several statutes that I guess we've got lawyers that we've hired, and there's several statutes that they've quoted, which I'm not a lawyer. But the way we read it is if you're using that, he is an heir. That was one of the qualifications. Am I correct,
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, I believe yes. I don't know what the relationship is, but yes, he probably is a qualified heir, and that's why it's the property tax assessor's reclassification of the property to something other than that. Last year you changed it to allow 4BB reclassifications and reclassifications to rural vacant land to qualify, but I suspect that some other property tax reclassification occurred here that triggered the recapture tax.
Okay, please, Mr. Teacher, and then we're going to go to member questions.
Do you have anything else?
You have anything else?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Questions
Thank you, Mr.
for
Chair.
Members? Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for Mr. Michael, how is it that a bank could decide to split up the land and have just the garage and the house, and therefore that triggered the new assessment of the residential? How is that allowed that a bank could set that in motion? Obviously, they were funding it and giving them the loan, but I'm just curious how that can happen and then change the assessment. I see how it can change the assessment. Did I make myself clear on how that bank can decide and let this all thing go in motion?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, it's the assessor's decision on with regard to property tax classification, not the bank loan. So I think that's sort of a interesting sidelight, but probably irrelevant. But except to the extent it affected the assessor's judgment about the use of the property or something of that nature. It's very difficult for me to talk about these things without having seen the documents and knowing what's going on.
Well, we want to rule out, Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Chair. In that case, you should go to court.
There you go. Okay, Chair Groffalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Backer, and to the testifier. I want to make sure that I understand this situation. The property tax classification, before any changes took place, before the property was subdivided or anyone passed away, that property was designated as what property tax classification?
Class 2A farmland.
It was 2A.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the testifier. So then when the property got subdivided, the assessor took this to say that this is now, did the homestead designation change, or was there some other factor that led to, I'm trying to figure out what the assessor was thinking here without the assessor being here.
Mr. Thompson?
They changed the classification to residential. We tried to explain it to her, because if you go through there, I believe what we read is that pieces under 11 acres still can be classified as 2A if they're used in the right manner, sure. Meaning farming. We have grain bins, drying systems, cattle ship. Like I said, it's a farm. The commissioners even in Ortonville said it is a farm. She just changed it to residential. She told us several times that they classified as soon as my dad died, it was residential. It wasn't residential.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, and maybe to staff, so it sounds like the root problem here is the classification of the property. Aren't there procedures in law right now to challenge the classification for what a property is? Isn't there, I mean, there's an appeal process? Because it sounds like if the property were designated 2A, that from the representative backer's intent, this situation would be resolved. I don't want to speak for you, but can Mr. Michael, can you explain what that appeal classification process is in less than 15 minutes?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, yes, you can. You have the right to appeal an assessor's decision by either going to the Board of Appeal. There's a two-part process. You can go to the Board, or you can actually go directly to tax court. You know, and in this case, it probably had very little effect on the actual property tax that was going to be paid, and they were probably not aware of that this would trigger recapture tax as a result of it. That's sort of an unintended side effect. And, I mean, this is sort of a lesson in when you link a state tax to property tax, what can happen. And I think this also may be an instance where they claimed it's entirely possible that they claimed the exemption based on qualified property rather than the actual basic estate tax exemption that's available to everybody. That could be a factor in this too. I don't know, because you know it depends upon the value of the total farm. But, you know, we have a basic $2.1 million exemption, and so really what we're talking about here is the difference between $2.1 and $5 million, too. So there's that that goes on, too, without my seeing the documents. It's hard to know.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Michael, one last question for you. So does whether there's a homestead designation on this, does that matter or not?
Mr. Mangle?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, no, it doesn't. Because basically what the property needs to be is just continue to be classified as 2A. So the heirs may actually live in, you know, your district, and if provided they continue to rent the property out as farmland, they will continue to qualify. The change that was made last year where it said it's if you get reclassified to 4BB, that doesn't disqualify it. That fixed that problem if they rented out the homestead to somebody else and the assessor came in and said, this is now no longer 2A, it's 4BB. That no longer disqualifies it. Before the change that was made in 17, that would have, and that was done retro back to the original effective date.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just obviously, there's different ways to solve a problem, just something to kind of plant a seed there, but I'm just still trying to figure out how this happened. This is, I mean, aside from the six-digit, I mean, I've never gotten a bill for six digits from, I know, Mr. Chairman Davids, you get six-digit bills all the time. Yeah. So just Gaelic. I can understand why it would be alarming, but it would seem like there should be a way to resolve this, so just... Thank you for taking the time to come down and testify.
Thank you.
Mr. Thompson. Oh, I'm sorry, Chair Garofalo.
No, that was it.
Is this currently being litigated in any way, shape, or form?
No, it's not, Mr. Chair. We decided to come down and testify ourselves. We haven't told the lawyers one way or the other. It could be very expensive to do it that way, too. We're already over $30,000 in lawyer fees and haven't really feel like we've gotten any satisfaction out of it. And my father's land, the farm place, was only worth $1.36 million. It wasn't even close to $2 million. We sold Daniel, my nephew, which has been in the farming operation forever with his dad. We sold it to him for $95,000, exactly what everything was appraised for. There was no money gained, no money, we traded equipment, whatever we did, but it was all done as what it was appraised at.
Okay. We're going to take a couple more questions, then we are going to go to the department on this one. I have Hertas and Grunhagen, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to add that in the real estate business, mortgage lenders oftentimes will not provide a loan if the property is more than 10 acres because of the difference in the foreclosure laws regarding ag properties. And so I think what you saw here is the applicant wanting to procure this 10 acres from the family member, and then the mortgage lender telling them that we'll give you a mortgage as long as it's under 10 acres. So then they went through the subdivision process, which then made a one-acre parcel that is not capable with the house and buildings of really being productive farmland. And so then the assessor changed the classification, and that triggered the estate taxing, as I'm kind of hearing this fall through the cracks here.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hertas. Representative Grunhagen, then we'll go to the department. Representative Grunhagen.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just had three similar situations in my district over the last couple of years, and they appealed it, but it seems to me 98% of the time the appeal process simply reinforces the assessor's original decision unless there's a blatant. I don't have none of the, and again, my experience is a small percentage, obviously, but and it's expensive to go to tax court. So
your experience is static on this one.
Yeah, static, not bad. I'll have to look that up to see if it applies. But I mean, that's why I can see why they're seeking this type of remedy, because the tax court, I mean, you spend thousands of dollars on it, and of course you have no guarantee, but it does seem, at least circumstantially, that he has a case for what his concern is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Okay, we'll now go to the department. If you could join us, please. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. So this bill modifies the recapture tax imposed against the heirs of an estate whom defaulted on their three-year agreement relating to the small business and farm property deductions claimed on the decedent's estate tax return. And, Mr. Chair, I know when this was originally put into law, what this was intended to do is to provide a larger tax benefit regarding the estate tax to those who are engaged in farming or who are engaged in business. And I know this was your provision, Mr. Chair, in 2011. And so that is how the recapture tax was set up. So I know that today we're trying to deal with a specific situation brought by a taxpayer, but I also wanted to lift up that this creates larger policy decisions within this policy as well, rather than trying to deal with a surgical approach. And specifically, the bill limits the calculation of the recapture tax to the value of the property that ceases to satisfy the qualified property rules, rather than the entire amount of the estate's qualified property. So if you said that we're going to pass along a piece of small business or farm to an heir, and then later on you'll say, well, we're going to sell off half of the farm or something, what this bill would say is that the recapture tax would be claimed only against half of the farm or whatever it was. It also exempts from the recapture tax reclassification of farm property up to one-fifth of the total acreage if the qualified heir has not substantially altered the use of the property during the three-year holding period. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to provide some context that this proposal broadens the type of reclassification that is allowed. While the bill defines the parameters of the classification for those properties where they did not substantially alter the use, you know, that really definition will have a large bearing on whether the recapture tax is assessed. Now, I think the department will take some responsibility for the usage of not substantially altered the use, but we just, as long as, you know, if this is another area in which there could be some definitional issues or disputes in the future, I think that we would like the opportunity to continue to work to try and create a very clear definition of what substantially altered means. In addition, Mr. Chair, the proposed change on lines 2.11 to 2.14 allows heirs who receive the qualified farm property to reclassify the property acreage to any classification in section 273.13 as long as less than one-fifth of the total acreage claimed and does not substantially alter the use. You know, section 273.13 is a general property tax classification section, and so that contains such classifications as CI, airport landing areas, resort vacation homes. I know that in 2017, the recapture tax reform was passed in a law allowing 2B and 4BB reclassifications that were intended to cover similar usages of the property, but not large deviations of usage. Mr. Chair, one thing that we do want to thank Representative Backer for is that this this really focuses on the estate tax. One of the things that we talk a lot about in property tax, and I know that Representative Draskowski would likely agree, is that dealing with farm classification is very, very complicated. And so if we're really trying to deal with an estate tax issue, let's deal with it as an estate tax issue rather than creating yet more complications within our ag classification system. So in that respect, we really appreciate Representative Backer's work on this bill. And honestly, there have been many provisions that have tried to deal with something around this topic, and we really think that this approach is getting better and better in terms of what we've seen in the past. So we really appreciate working with you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Backer and staff as this provision continues to work through this session.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings, for that. But as far as your comments about trying to keep the two separate, in this case, the two are intertwined. They're joined at the hip. The property tax class reclassification versus the estate tax and right. How that's counted. I think Mr. Michael said it when this is when you mix the two, what you can get. I think from what I've seen here and heard, I mean, the department did what the department's supposed to do. It's just we have, seems like we have a failure to communicate with certain folks here. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Cummings.
Now, that is because the rules under this estate tax provision are tied to the property tax. So I just want to be clear that if there's a way to surgically deal with this issue or other types of issues, you know, we can talk about how to define the property within this estate tax statutes. But to say that somehow we should allow new ag classes or different ways of trying to define what a farm is or, you know, homestead or whatever that is, I think that's a whole nother level of discussion. So I just wanted to note that we appreciate that this being limited to how we're viewing the estate tax. And referencing the property tax is one thing, but changing the property tax statute is a whole other thing.
Thank you. Questions from members for Mr. Cummings and the department? Okay, thank you, Mr. Cummings. With that, we're coming back. You'd like to wrap it up?
Again, would appreciate your consideration with this. It is a interesting situation, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. And Representative Grunhager introduced the motion, House File 3271, as amended, related for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Grunhager. Thank you, Representative Backer.
Thank you,
Mr. Thompson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Item next, which is item last, we have before us House File 3274. And I will move Representative Smith's bill. I do not see any amendments. Do you have any amendments, Representative? Well, we'll let you get to the table here first.
Mr. Chair.
Is this your first time before the Tax Committee?
No, Mr. Chair, no. I've been here many times, but this institution and your committee, sir, is steeped in tradition, and I've been continuing that tradition by bringing treats every time I've appeared before this committee.
I like that tradition. Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. It's one way to how a bill becomes a law. They never put that in there. Okay. So with that being said, as I said, I will move House File 3274 so we have the bill before us. And thank you very much. I think we might just take a little bit and get these out and just wait with your testimony just a little bit because I can't do two things at the same time.
Start with the chair.
Oh, no, don't pass it down. Give it. Oh, my gosh. I love treats and snacks. There we go.
Make sure Paul gets one here, too.
Got them going both ways here?
You're lucky that the students left.
Did you bring that?
Oh, that was a good bill. I mean, good roll.
No.
The chairman, I was overlooked again. I thought we were going to start.
Anyone need a tissue for?
I goofed.
Thank you.
I passed that around, too. So
that works.
Oh, yeah. I was taking care of it.
Because we're going to have sticky fingers.
Representative Smith, I like that rule. It's a very good rule. Okay. Two-year bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3274 has turned out that there is an issue for with married couples. They're being arbitrarily penalized if one passes before the other with a three-year gap. This, I believe, is an unintended consequence, and the department is treating married couples not as an economic unit, and I believe they should. And I have a testifier, Mr. Chair, that can offer some additional details to this provision.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Patrick Lowther. I'm an attorney from southern Minnesota. I'm here on behalf of the probate and trust law section of the Minnesota Bar Association.
Well, that's a pretty broad comment. What does southern Minnesota mean?
I go from Mr. Draskowski's area all the way to Pipestone.
Oh, you mean southern Minnesota.
Southern Minnesota.
Yeah,
I have five law offices.
Wow.
So I drive a lot.
I guess you do. Okay, with that being said, please, before I go into the testimony from the gentleman, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on behalf of this bill with concerns on this bill? And I think the department has some comments. We'll get to the department after we've had the witness. So please state your name again and who represents for the record. I didn't get your name.
Patrick Lowther, Lowther.
Welcome to committee, sir. Please proceed.
Thank you. I've been practicing law since 1980. My specialty is in wills and trusts. I would say that 90% of my clients are farmers, some wealthier than others. In this case here that is before you, father died in 2012. The attorneys created a marital trust for mom's money. She died in 2014. So there's a gap in the law about whether or not that second trust that was created by the attorneys is a single entity. And as Mr. as Representative Smith said, we think it's all one economic unit. So what happens here then is if we don't get this changed, we've got plenty of barriers out in the countryside as to the plight that farmers are in right now. We don't need any more barriers. We need better ways to help farmers. This one is a very narrow issue. It's not going to happen frequently, but when it happens, it inevitably impacts the farming child, and that farming child then has to come up with the money, and a lot of times there is no money. A lot of times it's hard for farmers to get bank loans to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxes. So in this case, this family has been farming for decades upon decades, and the farming child may not be able to continue that. So we're here to plug that hole, as Representative Smith has described.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Questions for members? Representative Petersburg and then Hertaus. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the justifier, so in this particular situation that you talked about, was the wife not a joint owner of the land prior to the death? Was that not correct? Because I would assume if there's joint ownership, that would fulfill the three-year requirement.
Mr. Lalder?
She was a joint owner. It's just that she died died before the 3 years.
Representative Petersburg?
But if she was a joint owner for the previous time, she was joint owner for the 7, 8, 10, 12, every years prior to that as well, which would include those 2 years that she was after his death. So,
yes.
I mean, to me, that's the key question is she was actually an owner prior to that as well, and so why would it start over again at his death?
Mr. Lalder.
Thank you. That's actually our argument. But the Department of Revenue determined that it is a second entity. And so we disagree with that. And that's causing the hardship.
Because normally it wouldn't kick in until the second to die, but here it kicked in the first to die. And so you're not getting, okay.
Yeah.
Representative Hertaus and then Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lalder, one of the tax planning strategies, as I understand it, in setting up EB Trust is to take advantage of the estate tax exemption under each side of that trust. If we had conformity now with the new federal tax law with regard to the estate tax, and raised it to $11.2 million. I'm just curious how many clients of yours would be totally covered by the new estate tax exemption and wouldn't really be affected by whether or not they had an EB trust.
Mr. Lalder?
Thank you. We've got to be careful here because the federal exemption is $11.25 million. Minnesota's exemption this year is $2.1 million, and in 2020 it's going to be $3 million. So that covers a lot of people. In fact, I have to honestly say that it's becoming less and less that we do these complicated revocable trusts, AB as you call them. So what you've done in increasing the exemptions in the manner that you've done has really, really helped the farmers a lot. I think in your question you asked me how many of my farmers have more than $11 million. Lots of them. Lots and lots and lots of them. I have to say probably 70% of my farmers would be over $11 million. Mr. Chair?
Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, yeah, my question was really if we conformed at the state level to the federal level. My question was not how many farmers have a balance sheet that is over $11.2 million, but how many of your clients would be fully covered by this new higher federal exemption, and if Minnesota were to follow that, you know, how many would need to worry about setting up an AB trust?
Mr. Lowther?
Oh, boy. I would say that the large bulk of my clients would be covered by the $11
million. Rick, heard that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to remind members that not too long ago we heard that more people have gone to the moon than farmers paying the state tax.
Okay. Representative Smith, you wanted to weigh in on that?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Not the moon. I mean the bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't represent an agricultural district, but and I'm not a lawyer, but it seems like whenever we talk about the estate tax, we always get into talking about these trusts, which my understanding is that most people set them up for tax avoidance procedures or probate tax avoidance, or because they don't want to have to pay for their own long-term care should they become frail and dependent later in life, and that affects other budgets here. Would the purposes of this woman having set up a trust after her husband had passed be for any of those reasons? And is a trust in under law considered a separate legal entity? And that's why the law is being applied the way it is right now and you're proposing to change it. I'm still learning this area. And if you want, I'm sure Mr. Michael would be glad to help clarify as well.
Mr. Lowther?
It's very difficult to use a trust in Minnesota to avoid long-term care bills. So we that would not be one of the things that you said. The primary reason we do trusts are for family succession. And sometimes children fight. And so if it's all laid out in a nice package that everybody knows what's in it, and they do it when mom and dad are alive so that they don't, because when mom and dad are alive, they don't fight. They fight later.
No, they do when mom and dad are alive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to argue.
That's why mom and dad passed away.
So another reason is to avoid probate. And the legislature has helped us with that over the years by increasing the $75,000 personal property exemption, which, as long as you asked, that could be a lot higher to solve a lot more probate problems. So have I touched on most of what you said?
Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And the last question was the key one, which is, is, in the eyes of the law, the trust that was set up a separate legal entity from just her as the widow, and that's the heart of why we're being asked to change the law.
Thank you, Chair. We don't see that as the law. We see that as all part of one unit.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But you're still asking us to change the law, so somebody must have a different perspective and interpretation than you.
Mr. Lowther?
I wouldn't argue with that. Because.
Thank you.
But I do want to repeat that we're not talking about a lot of problems here. We're talking about a very narrow issue, an issue that should not ever have come up, and simply we just need to plug it up.
Representative Smith?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative, to your question, the department is treating some married couples not as an economic unit. And this bill simply states that married couples should be treated consistently as an economic unit. That is all.
Representative Loeffler?
Thank you. I look forward to learning more.
Thank you. Any other questions for members? We'll now go to the department. Maybe. Is that tampering with a witness? Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
I was able to briefly talk with Representative Smith before the hearing today. This bill corrects two technical errors and expands the pre-death three-year ownership requirement relating to the qualified small business property and farm deductions claimed at the decedent's estate tax death. Mr. Chair, I know that there's been a lot of talk of community property this morning, and we are not a community property state. So I just want to be very clear that that in order to move to be a community property state, that would be a much larger discussion that would take many other committees in order to do that. And so this is trying to create an exception for that within this provision within the estate tax. So I just want to be very clear that we're not talking about making larger changes to how this is treated. And as we're talking about one economic unit or two economic units, right now they are separate economic units. And in fact, each of those separate economic units get an additional exemption under the law. So there is a large tax benefit for the various economic units. Beyond that, Mr. Chair, I think the Department of Revenue is still reviewing this legislation to understand the impact on taxpayers and the alignment with longstanding tax policies. This can be a complicated part of the law, and we want to make sure that we continue the conversation with the committee if something comes up. With that said, we appreciate Representative Smith's focus narrowly modifying the estate tax rather than creating new large tax policies within the estate tax or the property tax. We really want to focus our comments on the effective dates. For the effective dates that apply to the policy changes in this bill on lines 3.13 and 4.6, the current retroactive dates for estates of decedents dying after December 31, 2017 is the earliest possible effective date that would be workable. However, the bill's proposed effective dates on line 1.17 and 5.3 regarding two technical corrections should be changed to match the effective dates of the section changes adopted last legislative session, so they should be effective retroactively for estates of decedents dying after June 30th, 2011. But as I noted before, Mr. Chair, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you and Representative Smith and staff, and we thank you for the opportunity to come before the committee today.
Well, and thank you. Mr. Michael, if this bill would make it so it's one unit, would then one of the spouses be giving up their personal exemption?
Mr. Chairman, no, that would not be the case. Essentially what they're doing is they're proposing to treat ownership by either spouse in various forms as being allowed to meet the three-year holding requirement. In my mind, that's the simple way to express what's going on. Whereas now, like the witness said, it's a fairly narrow situation where if you have the second spouse to die, dies within that three-year period, depending upon how the ownership was structured, they may lose the advantage of the qualified property treatment.
Okay. I'm sorry, were there any questions for the department, Mr. Cummings, on this? Okay, with that, any questions for members of the witness or Representative Smith? Representative Smith, you'd like to wrap it up?
Mr. Chair, appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith, and I will renew my motion to House File 3274 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And members, you'll notice on your agenda that we have the agenda for the next meeting. I kind of like that. So we have a Bennett bill, Hoppe, Eklund, Liebling. With that, anything else for the good of the order? If not, good government all the time. We are adjourned.